From RunAsRadio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Nguyen announcing show number 350, Surface in the Enterprise, with guest Chris Evans. Recorded Thursday, December 19th, 2013. Run As Radio is produced each week by PWOP Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon, and this is Richard Campbell, and thanks for listening to Run As Radio. With me today is Chris Evans. He's a senior premier field engineer supporting enterprise premier customers with dedicated contracts. His specialty is platforms and Active Directory, and he's been working in IT for over 17 years, primarily in financial services. He came onto Microsoft about 6 years ago, and his full-time dedicated customer is Express Scripts, a mail-order pharmacy, which was acquired by Medco in 2012. And he's in New Jersey. Welcome, sir.
Hi, thank you.
So you snowed in yet?
We are indeed.
The Northeast has been getting clobbered this year.
It certainly has. It's been a very snowy year early on.
Yeah, already.
But we're doing just fine.
Yeah, we're recording this in December. I think it's going to come out in January. But either way, I think you'll be snowed in the whole time.
It sounds that way.
Yeah. We've talked to PFEs in the past, and do you travel a lot, or do you primarily work around New Jersey?
I primarily work around New Jersey, but I do spend a fair amount of time on the road as well. My customer is spread out across the continental United States, so I visit different sites as well as the internal Microsoft sites for training.
Cool. Well, an interesting role, PFE. I mean, it basically, you've got a primary customer, so it's almost like you're a contractor from Microsoft for Medco.
Yes, that's correct.
And mostly focused on the expertise around challenges of Active Directory. Is it that large scale of a system that it needs a lot of attention?
Yes, it is. So my particular customer, they have a dedicated team that looks after just the Active Directory installation in their organization. So it very much can be pretty time consuming, and it's a exceptional experience being able to work with the Active Directory administrators, at their organization, as well as, you know, interfacing with customers around the globe on behalf of Microsoft.
Absolutely. So are you seeing Microsoft Surface devices starting to appear in organizations like this? Are they looking at how to use them?
Yes, they are. It took some time for tablets to start to permeate the market.
Sure.
Obviously, on the consumer side, that's been a little bit sooner.
Yeah.
But in the enterprise space, customers are very much looking at different form factor devices, where industry trends are going, mm-hmm. and much like Microsoft's, you know, foray into the devices and services arena, which is now our core focus of the organization, companies like Express Scripts and others are equally investigating options to allow their users to utilize bring your own device into the organization,
yep.
as well as more portable form factors such that they can keep their employees productive, mobile, and allow them to accomplish, you know, their work activities.
I do feel like the round of second generation Surface devices, the Surface 2 devices, has given Microsoft a lot more legitimacy. It feels like the dam broke open when the next wave came in.
That's very true. There was, substantial improvements in both the Surface 2 and the Surface 2 Pro devices that really kind of matured the offering, even in its second generation, such that it's starting to show a significant value proposition for customers and consumers alike.
All right. Now, I mean, I'm going to presume most people know, but just to be complete, why don't we talk about the RT devices and their differences first? And I'm really interested in your experiences with them in the field.
Certainly. So when we compare the Surface 2 with the Surface Pro 2,
mm-hmm.
obviously the name is immediately a giveaway as to there is some difference between these devices. When we break them down a little bit further, it really comes down to use cases. The hardware itself differentiation-wise, they're both a 10.6-inch tablet. Both devices come in at under the 2-pound mark. So the Surface Pro 2 is at exactly the 2 pounds. The Surface 2 is just a little bit under 1.5 pounds. Those are the immediate differences. You'll notice a small weight difference where the Surface Pro 2 comes in at about the 2-pound mark. In addition to that, the width of the device is a little bit greater on the Pro version. Now, when we start to talk about the internals, this is where we really start to see the core differences. The Surface 2 devices are intended for customers, whether they be consumers or corporate, that are looking for a tablet device. A tablet device being primarily to consume content, right?
Okay.
You may read some emails, you may put some updates on your favorite social networking site, you may do some instant messaging, primarily consumption. Whereas the Surface Pro 2 is actually a full replacement for a laptop or desktop class device. And this is intended for users that are also looking to consume, but in addition to that, to produce or to do something with the device. So some of the inherent differences are around the processor architecture.
Right.
So in the Surface 2, we use what's called a NVIDIA Tegra 4 processor.
Okay.
Comparatively, on the Surface Pro 2, we're using the fourth generation of the Intel Core i5 processor,
right,
which offers us significant improvements in terms of the amount of processing power. In addition to that, we also coupled the amount of RAM in the system to the workload. So comparatively, the Surface 2 comes built in with 2 gigabytes of system RAM, whereas the Surface Pro 2 will start off with a minimum of 4 gigabytes or up to 8 gigabytes of RAM, depending on the hardware selection.
Now, Tegra 4, these are ARM chipsets, right?
So, that is correct.
Okay, so that's what most people are going to know.
So when we talk about the ARM processor chipset, we're looking at areas of improved power efficiency. So we notice that just in the amount of wattage that the power supplies use.
Right.
In addition to that, some of the other differences are around the amount of processing power and applications that they can run.
Sure. You have to compile for ARM.
That is correct. And where you locate the applications to install on the device is one of the biggest differentiators. Surface 2 devices will utilize Windows Store apps exclusively.
Right.
A Windows Store app is very similar to what you would use with a Windows Phone 8 device, where you go up into the store application that's part of the device, search for the software you're interested in, some being free, some being for a charge, and download them to the device directly. These are also known in the Windows 8 world as modern UI applications.
Right.
Your Surface Pro 2 devices can run all of those same applications, plus all the native Windows desktop software that we've been familiar with for many years.
Yeah, it's and that's sort of the known model.
Such as applications that you download from the internet or run from a setup exe command line.
Or from Windows Update Server or any of our, I mean, the Pro device can attach to Active Directory. And that's what, for me in an enterprise, I think I care about the most. Is then I get group policy, I can deploy my apps to it. Like, in terms of the command and control system I have today, Pro devices just work with it. Where regular Surface devices, these ARM devices, you have to jump through some new hoops. And we've done some shows in the past here talking about how you actually manage those things and manage iPads and Android tablets to boot.
Right, and that's exactly correct. The manageability aspects of it are a pretty key differentiator, although there have been significant improvements in the Windows 8.1 space that helps shrink this gap pretty significantly. Items such as work folders and the ability to manage devices, mobile devices using MDM products have, you know, enhanced that capability for both the Surface 2 as well as the Surface 2 Pro devices.
I mean, that being said, as an enterprise looking to go into Surface devices or tablets in general, isn't the path of least resistance the pro device? Like now I can use all my existing infrastructure. I know what my deployment model looks like. I don't have to deal with the store. Like it's a more expensive device, but it seems like the latest generation, the distance between in power consumption and so forth, just isn't that far between the pro and the regular.
And that's a very valid point, Richard. So you're exactly correct. One of the areas that will really make a differentiator for the enterprise is in the area we've spoken of already around manageability.
Right.
But in addition to that, it's around application compatibility.
Right.
So corporate enterprises are, filled with line of business applications, that may have been written in, earlier days that continue to run quite successfully in the Windows platform. And the Surface Pro 2 device continues to extend that capability into this form factor.
Well, and it comes some of the conversations I've had with folks about what it takes to actually deploy a modern app in the enterprise. If you don't want to put that app into the store, this is a non-trivial effort. Like there's a bunch of pieces involved here. Have you done this? Can you talk to what it takes to really do it?
Absolutely. It's actually a little simpler than it sounds.
Okay.
And that might be contrary to how it reads
right.
in the documentation. There's a couple key core requirements.
Okay.
The addition of Windows that you run on your device is going to be one of them. So we built in the capability to what we're describing as known as side loading an
right.
application into the Windows 8 Enterprise version.
Right. So we're dealing with an RT device, one of the Surface 2s. They don't come with Enterprise. You have to upgrade.
That is correct.
So step one is upgrade the OS on this device to Enterprise.
That's correct. And that would be a Surface 2 Pro device in this case.
Oh, okay. I'm thinking about the non-Pro devices. Like, I'm not worried. I know I can make Pro work because it's a PC. It's running regular Windows. But it's the ARM devices that I'm trying to figure out. Can I actually make this work in the Enterprise?
Not to the extent that we're discussing right now.
Right. I mean, first and foremost, group policy's out the window. We've had conversations with folks about, okay, well, how do you enforce a policy? For me, it's just, how do I get the apps on this device in a reasonable way?
Exactly. And in this case, because of the limitations that are inherent with ARM-based processors, the store application is your only option
right.
with the actual Surface 2 devices.
Okay. And so it's really not practical to sideload into a non-Pro device?
That is correct.
Okay. I mean, that's a real fair statement. I think for me, people complain about the confusion here around, do I want these ARM devices? They're cheaper. In theory, they have more battery life. They're simpler. Like, you just can't get in as much trouble with them. But if I can't manage them, they're just a non-starter. And as much as I like the Surface Pros, which are good, Acer is making some really inexpensive Pro devices now. Like, in terms of price point, battery life, it's just not that big a deal anymore. You're pretty close. So if there's anything I can get from our conversation, just like, hey, let's not worry about Pro if we really want to manage things. Or let's not worry about the RT devices if we just want to manage things. Let's worry about Pro. And that just simplifies the conversation. So that's exciting to me that we can deal with that. But it's still not that easy to sideload on Pro, is it?
In fact, it really is. When it comes down to it, the sideloading operation in and to itself is a fairly trivial operation.
So let's get back on the path then, right? It's get Enterprise on the device, which is fine.
That's right. Get Enterprise on the device.
Yeah.
We set a couple of very simple group policy settings. And in this case, we'll be applying them unilaterally to ensure that any devices in the environment pick up these requirements.
Right.
And at that point, it's purely a matter of inserting a couple of application parameters to install the application into the OS, which then, of course, you can use to build a system image, which can be used for mass deployments. So the idea being that these are common line of business applications, maybe some kind of CRM-based app or a headcount tracking type application that works with HR, something that'll be common across an entire organization. And you can load these in and then produce a image, which you would then use to deploy devices around the organization with these applications already pre-installed.
So are you really doing a group policy deploy, or are you just building up an image and then pushing the image? Is that all Microsoft Deployment Toolkit?
It's a combination of both. So group policy is used to push the configuration that allows for the side loading initially.
Okay. So it's really about setting policy to allow side loading. Isn't there a license you need to be able to do that? Does that come with the enterprise license of the OS?
Therein lies the reason why you would run enterprise in that scenario.
Okay.
Now, in cases where you don't have the enterprise SKU loaded, and that's not part of your licensing agreement with Microsoft, there is an additional product key that can be added to Windows 8.1 Pro in order to allow side loading to those devices.
Right.
So there is an alternative path if enterprise was not achievable for your organization.
Right, because enterprise is only available with volume licensing agreements.
That's correct.
Right. Okay. So if you're not a volume licensed customer and you still want to side load, you've got to buy this additional key. And I think they came in bundles, didn't they? It was like you had to buy a certain number at a time.
Yeah, and most of those kind of situations do. I believe they start in and around the 25 count mark, and then they, you know, scale up from there depending on what your organization's needs were.
The nice thing here is once I can use group policy, group policy deploy is pretty nice. Like, that just works like a hot damn.
Very much so. Group policy is definitely one of the keys to the power of Active Directory, with the ability to push down, you know, configuration settings across a limited number or to an entire environment's worth of devices
right
in a single shot.
That's cool. And so, and the whole thing here is to load a real Metro app. I guess I can say that. I don't work for Microsoft, but that's really what it is.
That's right. So from our standpoint, we're referring to them as Windows 8 applications or modern interface applications.
Right.
But yes, it's very much around kind of the full screen, touch enabled class of applications. A little bit different than a kind of a native Windows application, only in the sense that for the most part, they're not resizable, although one of the great features of Windows 8.1 has introduced the ability to do split screen, where we can load modern applications and then split the screen in differing panel sizes, like a 1/3, 2/3, or a 50-50 split, and have multiple modern apps up. Previous to 8.1, that wasn't possible. It was one application per screen.
Yeah. And although, when you think about working in the field, inside an organization with a tablet, I'm thinking you want full screen most of the time.
Yes, in many cases, that's exactly correct. And when you're also considering the tablet form factor, some of the modern shell components in Windows 8.1, meaning the interface, which up to and includes that new presentation of the start screen, the charms bar, which aligns the vertical side, right side of the screen when you swipe in. These add further capabilities to the application, such as sharing data between applications. So let's say that you're out, you're working in one of your apps, and you come across a particular link and you need to share that with a colleague. You can simply swipe in from the right side of the screen, bring up the charms bar, select the sharing option, and then you can pick your application that you wish to use to share that. Perhaps it's an instant messaging application, it might be email, or some other app that's, you know, in the modern application list that can support sharing. It makes it very simplistic to do so. But yes, in many cases, the full screen is oftentimes what you're focusing on when you're, you know, undertaking a certain task.
The conversations I've had with my customers where we're talking about tablets, we're really talking about re-engineering the workflow entirely. And the catchphrase we've been using is we're taking the computer to the work, not taking the work to the computer anymore. And so that sort of lends itself to this sharing and communication problem a lot. So I've got a guy who's now taking this tablet with him out into a warehouse, checking on particular products, and he needs to communicate back with someone. So this idea of going 1/3, 2/3, so his app for inventory is in the 2/3, and the 1/3 is Skype. And he's calling internally to the organization, other side of the building kind of thing, and just chatting with the guys. They're checking off particular items. I think it's really a really interesting work scenario.
It is, indeed. I mean, and it really combines a power of, you know, where computing in the workplace is going. It offers portability. It offers collaboration. It offers the ability to share that information very easily while still maintaining security and manageability of the devices. And in many cases, depending on how the organization implements it, that user can also co-host their own personal data on it in a bring-your-own-device type scenario.
Yeah, now the BYOD, which I wrestle with a lot. As an old-school IT guy, I hate everything about it. And I also wonder if it's a flash in the pan. Like, I understood BYOD really started when the CTOs showed up at the office with an iPad and told their VP engineering or, you know, IT operations guy, I'm going to be using this thing, figure it out. And you can't argue with the CTO. What are you going to do? And back then, we didn't have an alternative. We didn't have a Surface device that could be domain joined properly, InfoSec and so forth, so you couldn't just reach out and go, here, have this. Now, here's the problems I've got, Chris. You bring your own device to work. In order for me to sideload business apps onto it, I have to either upgrade it to enterprise or install a key on it. That's your device. If you leave, can I take that? Can I downgrade you or can I pull that key back off?
Right. So the manageability aspect of it is definitely key. There are options such that you could remove those keys or represent it back with the original installation key that came with the device, if that was, in fact, a scenario that you potentially could encounter.
Yeah.
In addition to that, the manageability aspects that are available, particularly with the Surface Pro 2 devices, also allow for further capabilities in that area. So the answer is really yes. There are ways of restoring that device back to a typical base installation, such that a user that made the, you know, the outlay for the cost of the device would receive that device back in a very comparable working manner as it was, you know, when we loaded the corporate apps and any other keys that might have had to be installed.
And that's my big concern with BYOD is this mixed use mode. You've got personal stuff on there, you've got work stuff on there, and I think it's pretty hard to keep them separate. In the end, as an IT guy, I suddenly have a responsibility to monitor your personal machine because it's got business stuff on it. And I think that upsets people. I've run into situations where we've had a user inside of the organization quite upset that IT is watching her device because it's got business apps on it now. And you know, after going around a couple of rounds about how do we maintain privacy back and forth, it's like, you know, a tablet's $400. Go get another one. Here, this is your work tablet. Here's your personal tablet. Ne'er the two shall meet.
Right, and that is—it's a very valid, you know, statement. I have to agree with you in that regard, Richard. And it is something that, as we've, you know, started to approach BYOD in organizations, up to and including my own customer,
sure,
it's very much something that's moving forward. So CIOs, CTOs, and right down to the workers themselves, really have a desire to consolidate. Much like in the way, if you look back over technology over the last 10 or 15 years, think about the number of devices that an IT pro or even a worker at some point during their career was walking around with.
Yeah.
I can easily think back to a day when I was carrying a PDA or a personal organizer. I had a cell phone. I had a pager.
Yeah.
I had a laptop. I had, you know, my desktop device. Of course, I don't lug that around with me. But, you know, just the sheer number of devices now. Now I'm down to the point where I can literally operate and work productively from my tablet and my mobile phone.
Right.
And sometimes those are even one and the same device. So I think consumers are also starting to kind of key into that. You know, it's kind of the device sprawl, if you will, and wanting to get down to a point where you can easily be portable, right? So portability is only so good as how much you're carrying around with you, right? If I have to carry a 7-pound laptop, a 2-pound tablet, you know, a handful of other cables and supporting peripherals, that starts to limit my ability to be portable. But when we look at the other side of the argument, which is how to preserve that kind of isolation between what's mine and my personal information and data and what's corporate related, we've looked at it from a position of compartmentalization, and that's how we're approaching encryption on the devices.
Right.
So obviously in a work environment, data could be sensitive, right? Mm-hmm. We want to make sure that companies are not exposing data that they necessarily don't want to have public or have the necessary controls should something in the worst case scenario happen to the device, such that they have a level of assuredness that their data is being protected. And that's how we're approaching it in the BYOD world. We're actually compartmentalizing that work data into a central location on the device, and then allowing for encryption of only that data, such that your personal data would still be very much accessible, would be completely separated from your corporate or work-related data. And in cases where you have Surface Pros in use, there's even capability with work folders such that you can provision access externally directly into shared file resources.
So you have built this dividing line now where this is business stuff, it's encrypted this particular way, it can be remotely wiped. You know, we have a sort of sense of audit about who's got it and where it is. So, I mean, that's all pretty compelling stuff. There's pieces that cross between personal and business fairly painlessly. I think of email. Like, it's pretty normal for me these days to carry two cell phones. It's not because and I think back to the good old days when you had a BlackBerry and an iPhone. BlackBerry was the one issued by work, and iPhone was the one you wanted. And one was yours and one was theirs. And now, I'm ended up carrying two phones mostly because of my travel, where I have my local SIM, my home SIM in one phone, and I have the SIM from the country I'm in the other one. But I don't even blink at the fact that both of them have the same access, the same email account, and are constantly up to date to each other and can be remotely monitored, remotely wiped, remotely controlled. Like, that's trivial. It's just, I don't see how well that we have this great example in email, but I don't see the equivalent in a lot of custom developed apps inside of the organization that they can behave that well.
Right. And let's face it, right? I mean, this is also something that's developing. There's, you know, a lot of work going on in this space as organizations are figuring out how do they ramp up to be able to support these type of work scenarios. Are they going to be applicable across the organization? No, that's not really realistic, you know, as is the case of one device being a perfect fit for every workload case, right? We know that out in the enterprise that we have, you know, some number of users that are, you know, effectively information users, right? Mm-hmm. They primarily consume maybe a handful of applications. They may all be online-based applications now.
Right.
That don't even require, you know, native installation of apps on the device itself. Similarly, the devices also have different capabilities, you know, based off of what their use case may be. So information workers may be fine with a Surface Pro class device where they only need to be able to access some documents and they might be able to use their work folders for that.
Yep.
And then other applications, they can utilize, you know, remote access gateways and, you know, web-based or cloud-based applications that allow them to still remain productive, but without having to have as a capable device for heavier processing workloads. Whereas your power users, they may be the more appropriate fit for the Surface 2 Pro devices, where we have the full capability of manageability. They require line-of-business applications, compatibility with other corporate apps, you know, that have been in the enterprise for some number of years. And so, again, it's really a matter of finding the right use case and then matching the technology to it. And I think as time progresses, you're going to see more and more maturity, not only by organizations, but also by the technologies that support these scenarios.
Well, and you get back to what are these devices capable of? I mean, all Surfaces, or can we call them Surfi? All Surfi have keyboards. You can use them as content creation devices, at least do email on them anyway.
That's right. I mean, in the case of Surface Pro devices, you even have a built-in version of Office installed, right, up to and including a copy of Outlook 2013.
Yeah, the version of Office that's in the RT devices is pretty interesting, too. I always thought Microsoft should have just sold it as, hey, it's an iPad with Office.
Right. Yes, it is. It's a very compelling part of the offering, in fact, because, as I stated, a lot of times it's for consumption of content.
Right.
But then you add in the one component, which is your office workers, right? Yep. And again, for information workers, the majority of the work that we're often doing is primarily in the office suite. So as long as I can access my data, I can read and make some number of edits within the applications themselves. I have the familiarity of using the same version of Office on this device as if I went to a full desktop or laptop class machine. So I have that familiarity and the common interface to move between in both scenarios.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, very compelling approach to doing things, easy to take care of. It's just, you know, the challenge for me is not the hardware anymore. It's the workflow. It's unraveling 20-something years of we compile this paper to get it to a cubicle where a desktop machine is, and somebody transcribes that paper into the computer. And taking that workflow apart to go all the way back to where the data actually comes from so you can bring the device to that, that's an interesting challenge.
Very much the case. And so when you look at some of the improvements that have come along with Surface Pro and Surface 2 Pro, introduction of a docking station for these devices makes that transition a little bit simplified, such that you can still utilize a large screen display.
Right.
So it's very common now to have one, two, maybe as many as four, you know, 20-plus-inch monitors at your desk, maybe having a little more of an ergonomic set of peripherals, such as a keyboard and mouse, you know, having them wireless. These are all capabilities that you can utilize with your Surface 2 Pro now. Also, they support the Surface Pro, which was the Generation 1 offering of that device.
Right.
And such that you can bring your device in. While you're portable, you can use the either the touch or the type keyboard that's integrated directly with the device, right, the Snap. But then you could remove that and drop your Surface 2 Pro or your Surface Pro into a docking station and use a very familiar environment in order to still be productive in the workplace.
Well, it's just like the old
mobile scenario.
The old laptop docking station, but you know, now it's for a Surface device. The question is, do you even look at the machine anymore? Once you plug it into the Caddy, you could have a separate keyboard display and just go.
Well, I have to tell you, you know, I mean, having played with those both of those use cases myself personally,
yeah.
I find more and more that I am becoming very acclimated with the touchscreen capabilities,
right?
You know, that are available now, and obviously, you know, taken full advantage of in the Surface Pro and the Surface 2 Pro devices, and that is the full 10-point touchscreen. I will even find myself up to the point where I'm working on a non-touchscreen device that I'll just reach over and swipe the screen when I'm trying to, you know, page forward on a web page or, you know, move around.
Big screen monitors tend to sit further away. Reaching out to touch them is kind of a pain. So if you use your second monitor as a big screen that's not touch, and then you have your docking station set a little closer so it's easy to reach, that's a nice combination.
Exactly. You kind of get the best of both worlds in that
for
scenario.
Sure.
Yeah. And so, you know, I think it's like many things. As you begin to use it, much like if the first experience you had with Windows 8 was on a non-touchscreen device, things seemed a little bit different, right? And
right.
There was plenty of feedback on that point, which led to a lot of the improvements that came along with 8.1. However, if your first foray into Windows 8 was on a touchscreen device, a lot of things made sense about the presentation of the start screen and the charms bar. And the way that you move between applications and the applications being full screen in the modern interface.
Yeah, it's very cool. That's a neat combination. Well, Chris, a half hour has flown by. I really appreciate your insights on how folks are starting to use these devices. One of these days, maybe we'll get as far as a case study and really walk through a scenario.
Well, thank you so much, Richard. This has been my sincerest pleasure to join you today and, you know, talk about these wonderful devices. You know, we're so excited to see the tablet form factor really igniting. You know, it's obviously been prevalent in the consumer space, but in the enterprise, you know, it's starting to permeate and percolate, and customers, you know, much like my own, are, you know, right in the process of starting to deploy them. They're putting them not only out into the executives' hands, but also into their field force. They're really starting to see the power of the portability, as well as, you know, the capabilities of Windows that have now extended that form factor to be productive for business. And, you know, we're just so thrilled to be, you know, right at the ground level with this, and the devices, you know, have awesome capabilities. And the software continues to, you know, get better and better with them, as well as the, you know, the infrastructure and the ways that we can support them for our customers. So I want to thank you for the invitation to come on today and be able to discuss this with our listeners. And thank you.
You bet. Thanks very much. And we'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.